By stuffing dangerous pathogens in those arthropods, they inject the agent directly into the body so that a mask is no protection to a soldier and then will remain alive for some time, keeping an area constantly dangerous. So the military could drop these infected insects covertly in an area that they wanted to take over or attack, and it would weaken the population without destroying buildings or the knowledge of how to run a city. So it was quite a diabolical program.
Hello, everyone watching and listening. Welcome to another episode of Unrestricted. I'm your host, Veronika Kirilenko. Years prior to the COVID pandemic and the heightened public awareness of risky gain-of-function research, our military and intelligence communities were conducting secret bioweapons programs involving insects that could carry deadly pathogens. Investigative journalist and award-winning author Chris Newby uncovered strong circumstantial evidence suggesting that these programs that took place on American soil might have caused the outbreak of Lyme disease, a highly unusual and potentially chronic and debilitating condition, over 500,000 cases of which are reported annually. Ms. Newby has authored a book titled Bitten: The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons, which won 3 international book awards. She is formerly a science writer at Stanford University, now serving as communications director at a nonprofit called Invisible International, whose mission is to alleviate the suffering caused by vector-borne diseases through education, research, and community empowerment. Chris, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Chris, let's start with your work as a senior producer on the documentary called Under Our Skin, which was a huge success, right? It premiered in 2009 and was nominated for an Academy Award, and certainly drew a lot of public attention to Lyme disease and dysfunctions within our medical system that you uncovered. Why did you pick up this project, and what was its purpose?
So my husband and I in 2002 got 2 tick-borne diseases in Massachusetts, and it almost destroyed our family. We were so ill. And so then after I found the right kind of doctor who knew how to test and treat, I was well enough that I said, well, there's massive ignorance and misinformation about how to diagnose and treat this disease. So if I do a documentary, I naively thought, and just put the facts out there, the situation will be fixed. I teamed up with a really talented director in California, Andy Abrahams Wilson. So we started this 5-year journey of trying to shed the light on how all these patients with Lyme disease and tick-borne co-infections were being dismissed and going on to get chronically ill. The tests don't work. They don't work in the first month for Lyme disease, and they're no better than a coin flip later on. And so then those people would go on to get chronic Lyme disease. The other thing is that once you have Lyme disease and the medical establishment recommends 2 to 4 weeks of doxycycline, a really inexpensive antibiotic, a huge percentage of those people relapse, and they have the same symptoms that come back, yet the medical establishment won't let doctors retreat. So the movie talked about these injustices. And during the course of my research, I discovered for the first time the corruption in the for-profit medical system. I would say it started in 1980 with the Bayh-Dole Act that let scientific researchers partner with for-profit pharmaceutical companies in the creation of test kits and vaccines and drugs. And so that was a tectonic shift in medical research in the US, because before, scientific researchers, they would discover something and they would rush to publish and share that information with other scientists. So you have a compounding of knowledge on a new dangerous disease. With the Bayh-Dole Act, all of a sudden, the researchers became partners with Big Pharma and the researchers at CDC and NIH. So they would hide and protect that information because it was intellectual property. And the big pharma companies wanted to get first to market with those. So this happened with Lyme disease. And so the film focused on the injustices to patients and the corruption of medicine due to the profit motive.
You see, it appears that your initial interest was patient advocacy and raising public awareness about these tectonic shifts in medicine that served big pharma at the expense of patients. It was already a major story in itself, yet in your book, which was published 10 years later, you shifted your focus to the investigation of the potential link between Lyme disease and covert bioweapons programs. What caused this remarkable shift, Chris?
Yeah, it was an amazing fork in the road because I'd spent 5 years on this film. And I mean, yeah, 5 years on the film, I was ready to move on. I had this really good science writing job at Stanford. And I thought, well, it's time to move on. I'm better now. I can work. But right when that shift happened, two amazing things happened. One is the discoverer of Lyme disease, Willy Bergdorfer, was interviewed by a documentary filmmaker. And in that that interview, he said, well, yeah, I discovered Lyme disease organism, but there was something else there that I covered up. And he implied that he was working on the biological weapons program in the 50s and 60s, the bug-borne bioweapons program. So that alone was a big jaw dropper, but he was old, he had Parkinson's, it's not proof alone. And then another just random serendipitous thing happened. I was at an out-of-state birthday party for family only. There was one non-family member who happened to be a CIA operative during the Cold War. And he told me that he was involved in a pilot study where they dropped infected ticks on Cuban sugar workers. This is in 1962. Later, I found out it was called Operation Mongoose. And the goal of that was to destroy the sugar crop of Fidel Castro, who was the big bad guy back then. So those two things alone was like, I have a full-time job. But I felt so strongly that during the filming of the documentary, they were hiding something, and how could I walk away? So I decided I would take the more difficult path of working full time and then in nights, weekends, vacations, researching this other thing. Because both those sources were sole sources, and you needed more proof that these things really happened or not.
So you mentioned one name, Willy Bergdorfer, right? I hope I pronounce his last name
Willy
correctly.
Yeah.
So he's a central figure in your book. He's a scientist. What was his role in the bug-borne bioweapons program exactly?
He was brought over in 1951 to Rocky Mountain Labs in Montana. He served as a contractor for Fort Detrick, Maryland, and that was the headquarters of the biological weapons program. And his job was as a contractor was to research possibilities on turning fleas, ticks, and mosquitoes into bioweapons. So I quote an Army document in the book, by stuffing dangerous pathogens in those arthropods, they inject the agent directly into the body so that a mask is no protection to a soldier and they will remain alive for some time, keeping an area constantly dangerous. So the military could drop these infected insects covertly in an area that they wanted to take over or attack, and it would weaken the population without destroying buildings or the knowledge of how to run a city. So it was quite a diabolical program. But I have to say, the Germans had a program like that. The Russians certainly had a program. And the Japanese in World War II had a program like that. So after World War II, we divvied up, the Russians and us divvied up the scientists. And we realized this was a powerful weapon. So, hey, why don't we use it?
These scientists, they were from Nazi Germany. They were taking from their German labs, right, by Russians and by us Americans, right? And they were employed to work on this biological weapons programs. Is this correct?
Yes. So the Russians were doing it. We were doing it. It was a bug-borne weapons race.
This is fantastic. What are the key facts that you learned about the bug-borne weapons programs, including key milestones, experiments, and any documented incidents that support the connection of the outbreaks of Lyme disease to what was happening in the secret labs?
During my research, I think one of the most shocking things, there was an army-funded releases of radioactive aggressive Lone Star ticks in coastal Virginia. That's the U.S. Atlantic bird flyway. So migrating birds go from South America up through Cuba, the Caribbean, up through North America, up to Canada. So by release, so why did this researcher funded by the Army release these Lone Star ticks? Well, it's part of the mission of let's get a tick that's really aggressive, that can survive in cold and wet conditions. And that's Lone Star ticks. You can take a Lone Star tick and it can live underwater for 80 days. It can live in a freezer for a year, reportedly. So they would inject them with diseases. But for this release of Lone Star ticks at the beginning of this experiment, which was in the late 60s, Lone Star ticks were only in the southern United States. Virginia is on the border of the South and the North. And so they wanted to see how far a Lone Star tick could go if they released it in the wilds. So they made them radioactive so they could trace how far they went with Geiger counters. The problem is just a year or two after these open air experiments, uncontrolled, Lone Star ticks were up in the 13 colonies, like New York, New Jersey, established colonies on Long Island. And the problem is Lone Star ticks are much more aggressive than the deer ticks that were established in those areas. And they have rudimentary eyes so they can stalk their prey. And they carry a really dangerous disease called Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. And so also Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever was one of the organisms weaponized by the U.S. During the 60s. So all of a sudden people on Long Island off New York City started getting sick with spotted fever and dying. So I believe that is a huge driver in the epidemic that we're suffering from now. The Lyme disease outbreak started in the late 60s, really flourished in the 70s after DDT, the pesticide, was banned. So I think all three of these things were clues that something unusual man-made happened, and it started around Long Island in Connecticut, off the Long Island Sound.
And how many people do you think were infected during that release in the late 60s?
There's no way to tell. It was an emerging disease. The late 60s, three highly unusual tick-borne diseases all of a sudden appeared at the mouth of the Connecticut River, right across from the Plum Island animal research facility that did anti-animal weapons. So the three tick-borne diseases that showed up.
Okay. They were supposed to infect animals first.
Well, no, we don't know where they came from, but the three organisms are Babesia, which is a cattle-borne parasite that all of a sudden jumped over to man, that could have come from Plum Island. Nobody knows. And then there's the deadly Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. And then there's the new, what they called Lyme arthritis, which was caused by Borrelia burgdorferi, a spirochete. A version of it has been found in Europe forever. It creates an annular rash. So the thing that was interesting is Willie discovered Lyme disease, and all of the disease was blamed on this corkscrew spirochete, Borrelia burgdorferi. And later what he told me is there were other organisms in the tick that he felt like could creating this disease that we just labeled as Lyme disease. And he was asked to cover up the one organism that's relative of the Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, and it disappeared forever. So that's That's what my book reveals is the discoverer of the disease, the guy who has the most to lose, because he was famous for this discovery, was told to cover something up on this discovery. So that's highly suspicious. There's also these uncontrolled tick releases. I have evidence of one. There may be others, but all these documents have been destroyed or are classified. They're very hard to get to.
Congress uncovers new evidence of corruption against Biden, and a new indictment against Trump is filed. And we're not allowed to mention the coincidence here.
TheNewAmerican.com. Subscribe now to the most fiercely independent, unapologetically American news magazine out there. Get it delivered online into your home for 25% off the first year. No more. Do more.
Please tell us about the sources that you worked with. In your research, did you come across any declassified or classified records directly linking the bug-borne weapons programs to the development and release of tick-carrying diseases?
Well, the U.S. bioweapons program, which ran from basically 20 years before the U.S. canceled the program, it went from the 50s, where they focused on stuffing these arthropods with diseases. And then they decided it was like too hard to control two living organisms, the microbes and the bugs. So they moved, and rudimentary genetic engineering started happening. So the 60s were mostly aerosolized germs, and they picked germs that could be mass produced in quantity. So first of all, the program was ultra secret, and in 1972, when the program was canceled, a lot of the documents were torched, burned. So a lot of them aren't available, but I was fortunate to interview Willy Burgdorfer a couple times, and he, through an intermediary, he donated a bunch of his original lab notebooks and annual reports to Dietrich and letters that revealed the program, and they are digitized now at uvu.edu. It's an online repository for documents. So I got to look at those while I was writing the book before they were digitized. And so I have a very good paper trail of the experiments Willy did and how the development of these weapons progressed and then were ultimately canceled.
Well, given the seriousness of the allegations in your book, have you received any direct response from government agencies or officials regarding the claims of a bug-borne weapons program and its connection to Lyme disease?
So the book came out in May of 2019, and we kept it sort of under wraps till it was time to market it just a few months before. And before people read it, they largely dismissed it as part of the fake news milieu.
A conspiracy theory, for sure.
Right. It was so hard. And major media totally ghosted the book as far as reviews go. Then Chris Smith, a congressman from New Jersey, read it, and he was in the middle of the DOD budget. And he said, this is a very credible book. The allegations are serious because it's affected so many civilians, and we need to investigate it. The DOD, just like they investigated the Agent Orange damages to soldiers and the Shad experiments on boats and the effects on soldiers. So then the book became an international interest, sort of a laughing stock. And the government was largely ignoring it, but then all of a sudden, a Washington Post op-ed, you know, about 1,000 pages from a tick-borne disease researcher at Tufts University came out, and it didn't name the title of my book, but it linked to my marketing page. And so it discredited all these things in the book. And later I analyzed it, and there's like 15 lies, mistruths, or misdirections in it. And it just killed the sales of my book. So it was dormant. It killed a movie deal based on it, and it was dormant for a while. And lately it's resurged in popularity because of the allegations of NIH involvement in the development of bioweapons with relationship to COVID. So all of a sudden, like a threshold has been passed, like maybe what this woman is saying is true. To me, it's like I had layers of fact checkers. It's credible citations, archives, eyewitnesses. It's very credible. And I say exactly what I know and I don't know about the bioweapons program. Like, for example, I don't know exactly when, what the organism is and where it was released. Willie said it wasn't the Lyme spirochete. It was this rickettsia related to Rocky Mountain spotted fever. So, but I was hoping scientists would run with it. And I think that's beginning to happen. But we'll see.
Oh, well, it's very interesting. You mentioned the scientists. How have experts in entomology and related fields responded to the hypothesis presented in your book? Especially, I mean, you say that it's all backed with government documents, which is highly reliable and, I mean, hard to debunk. So what kind of feedback have you received from the scientific community? And have you collaborated with anyone, any other scientists to validate your findings?
Well, I don't have a PhD, MD degree. I don't have a research bench at a university. So I haven't had a whole lot of people reaching out to me, except for the people in the Lyme community who have seen that something is wrong with the research in this field. Like there's something they're hiding. But I mean, I certainly interviewed a lot of tick-borne disease researchers while I was researching the book. I went to the rickettsia conference and talked to a lot of people. I talked to the people in the inner circle who published the discovery, and they fact-checked the chapters that were related to them. Now, going forward, I watched the scientific literature, and I do believe there's been a response from researchers who are interested in this space. So two researchers from Rocky Mountain Lab all of a sudden genetically sequenced the pathogens in a bunch of ticks. And that was a step forward, because really what they found out is there are more pathogens in your average tick than anybody expected. And another researcher, two researchers, Lipkin and Tokars in Columbia University, they did the same. So I'm almost certain that the Rocky Mountain Lab people did that sequencing based on my book. I don't know about Columbia, but it's a step forward, because the thing about Lyme disease, it's not just Borrelia burgdorferi. Any given tick can transmit multiple pathogens, some of which can kill you in 14 days. So I would say in the beginning of Willie's discovery, Borrelia burgdorferi, the Lyme bacteria, was the fall guy. It was a distraction. So people wouldn't look inside the ticks to see what else was there. And now they're looking inside the ticks. So that's a step forward.
Well, these scientists that looked inside the ticks and sequenced the pathogens that were inside of them, were they able to say whether these pathogens came from nature or were they genetically engineered, like you'd expect a bioweapon to be engineered in a lab?
Okay, let's start with the Lyme disease bacteria. Willie Burgdorfer did not say that was the bioweapon. But recent genomicists, like one in Utah and one in Canada, have sequenced it, and they've written in peer-reviewed scientific papers that there's something unusual about the evolution of the genome of this organism. They said it's mysterious, there's rapid evolution. So you see those two words together and you wonder, was there human manipulation? Now, we do know for sure, and this is in documents, I sent one of them over to you, Willie was taking ticks and mixing viruses and bacteria inside the ticks, attaching them to furry little animals to see what combos of pathogens were deadly or incapacitating. Because when you combine a virus with a bacteria, there's this thing called transfection, where it's crude genetic manipulation. And certainly what he was doing was crude early science gain of function to create more virulent pathogens. So there's documents to that effect that are undeniable.
Wow.
As far as the effect of the book, I'm hoping that scientists pick up where the book left off, since I'm not a researcher. But the things I would hope they would look into are, has the genome of Borrelia burgdorferi been manipulated by man? And you can tell that these days, in the same way you can give a blood sample and a 23andMe can tell you where your ancestors came from 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago or 40,000 years ago. So I hope they do that. And this is really important, because if an organism has been modified by man, either COVID or Borrelia burgdorferi, you treat that disease differently than the ways that it's been traditionally been treated. And the main point of my book is, let's look inside the ticks, find out what was there, and let's declassify the documents that will tell us what ticks and what organisms were released in what areas, so we know how to treat local disease. We don't have to hire tick draggers with sheets on poles to cover the whole United States to figure this out. It'll save research dollars and it'll save lives.
What really blows my mind is, Chris, I mean, I get it. It was the Cold War with intelligence and the military wielding enormous power over life and death on this very planet, literally, right? But releasing weaponized bugs or letting these bugs escape from the secret labs and infect Americans with new diseases that nobody knew how to diagnose, let alone treat, was, I mean, beyond irresponsible to me. Were there any mechanisms put in place to ensure oversight and accountability for these bioweapons programs?
Not in the Cold War. It was all compartmentalized, need to know. It was the ends justify the means for the Pentagon planners because of the communist threat. There have been attempts since the Cold War to put layers of security. But one thing that's happened is, especially after 9/11 and the anthrax attacks, there's a record number of bio-level 3 and bio-level 4s established in the United States and outside of the United States that are doing dangerous research. And they have, some of them have spotty safety records. And it is impossible to have oversight in all those labs. So the chances of an accident go way up. Anybody who wants to be terrified, read Allison Young's book, Pandora's Gamble, because she's been covering for decades the proliferation of these bio-level labs. And then I think, again, we have this profiteering in the medical system where NIH is a partner with the vaccine developers, and all of a sudden you can't get a hold of the information on how much the NIH and CDC people have been paid by pharma to support a certain drug or vaccine, or fast track it through the FDA process. So we just desperately need transparency so we can see where the conflicts are and pull those weeds out.
Okay. We'll see how it goes. But my last question to you, I guess, is that, in 1972, the United States signed the Biological Weapons Convention. So there are various regulations and so oversight mechanisms in place now to monitor and regulate research involving potentially dangerous pathogens to prevent accidental or intentional releases. Are we safer now?
If the allegations about the COVID, I don't know. I don't think so. I think the way we handled the world handled, and especially the United States handled the pandemic this time around, was very similar to the way they handled it with Lyme disease, and where they're emphasizing the vaccines and not the cures and not the early treatments and prevention, is a disaster. And I hope we learn from those mistakes. I personally don't feel safer because CRISPR, which is the cut and paste of genomes, is available to many, many, many more people. And it's the ability to create Franken germs and monster pandemics like never before. So I do feel like we need more oversight, more transparency, more regulations, and fewer by a level four labs.
And yes, you mentioned that book that you've recommended to everyone about the biolabs and their proliferation in America. Are there any indications, or have you uncovered any evidence that they are still operational and working on something like new germs?
Not in America. I mean, I feel like they are
outsourced,
honoring that in spirit. That, but once you have a flask of a bioweapon and you're working on defense, it's called dual use. It's relatively easy to switch to offensive. I feel like America is not doing that right now. But again, I have no security clearance. I don't know.
All right. Chris, I would like to thank you so much for your time today. Please tell us, what's the best way to follow you and your work, and where can we find your book?
Twitter is the latest place I'm most active on updating it. I have a website that shows many of these documents, and that's chrisnewby.com, chrisnewby.com. So those are the best places to follow me. And then you can buy the book anywhere, audio or Kindle too.
Thank you. That was Chris Newby, everyone. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Veronica Kirilenko of The New American Magazine.
Remember when the only uncertainty in news was the weather forecast? Now, our world is clouded by half-truths, misdirection, and gaslighting. The deluge of lies from leftist activists posing as journalists is unrelenting. At The New American, we hold fast to the timeless truths of our founders. Sanctuary in the storm. Visit thenewamerican.com today and get 25% off your subscription.